This is Hitchhiking Off the Map.
Well, the Swami says that he started. I started right at the beginning. I remember one time a friend and I were doing a little music and comedy act, pretty unpolished. Although I think I would do stuff like Porky Pig doing Havanagila, and then Ed Sullivan doing Porky Pig doing Havanagila, and then a parrot doing Ed Sullivan doing Porky Pig doing Havanagila. I go, like that. So I'm trying to write this book, and I hear a voice, and normally I don't hear voices, and it said, let go of that book. That's the past. You need to focus on the future. Cool. What's the future? No answer.
Hello, and well, I guess the future is what you run into when you're looking over your shoulder at the past. But in spite of that, this is Hitchhiking Off the Map. This is Conrad Bishop.
And Elizabeth Fuller, and this is a show about journeys. Today, artists' journeys.
Whose stories are more interesting than anything we might babble about, so we'll jump right in and save the babble for next time. Coming up, a Brooklyn Swami, a Pakistani singer, and a few words from the King of Persia.
First, Steve Behrman.
Steve Behrman lives in Santa Rosa, California. He's a celebrity in terms of connecting at some time or another with hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of people. He also works very hard to make a living. If you know him, you probably know him in his turbaned version as Swami Beyondananda.
Thank you. It is great to be here. And you know what? We have no choice. Because no matter where we are, we're always here, right? And it is always now. So how many people would like to be in the now more? Oh, too late, already then, right?
So let's back up and get a running start on the evolution of a holy fool.
Where did I derive from? Well, me as Steve, I spent my deformative years in Brooklyn, New York. And there is something about Brooklyn, I don't know what it is, but there's something that evokes humor. People laugh at the whole concept of Brooklyn. And I was fortunate to grow up in a family where humor was very much appreciated. And, you know, it was a great tool growing up in the housing projects. And in school, I was the kid that would make the teacher laugh, and then I would get a zero. But the sign of having humor in your destiny, there's a sign given by God, and it's the first time you're in the lunchroom and you make somebody laugh so hard that milk comes out of their nose. That's the sign. So I was that kid. I was anointed. and then when I was about 12 or 13, I started doing song parodies of the songs I heard on the radio. And some of them were printable and repeatable. Some were not. But, you know, in the 50s, everything was kind of well put together. But under the surface, there was this huge fear of the bomb. You know, and as a kid, putting my head under the desk, thinking, how could this possibly work? I'm going to put my head between my legs, kiss my ass goodbye, and that's about it. So as a kid, I just noticed the things that weren't said, the things that were said. And so when I found Mad Magazine pointing out the naked emperors, this was something I could grok. And of course, I tried to fit in. In New York, if you're smart enough, you get to skip the eighth grade. So what happens is you get to graduate from high school at 16, socially retarded, and I went to Brooklyn College where you lived at home, so I was further socially retarded, and I tried to be a good boy, be a good student, tried to get serious. Somebody once asked the Swami about, should we teach sex education in school to keep our kids from getting promiscuous too soon? And Swami said, hey, yes, if school teaches sex like they teach everything else, the kids will lose interest. I think the first thing that happened, it was 1965, one of the great moments of grace. I think my senior year of college, even though I wasn't really growing my hair long on the outside, I was growing my hair long on the inside. But I had no idea. I was simply going to become a teacher because I was clueless and I didn't really have any plan for anything. I was just reacting. What are you going to do? Well, as a friend of mine, he used to channel Mel Brooks as 2,000-year-old man. And I said, so what are you going to do next year? He says, oh, they're having another one. So that's how I felt. And I was a very clueless kid, or as we say now, clue deficient, I think is the appropriate politically correct term. I was clue deficient about a lot of things. And I'm thinking graduate school, I'll start with the A's, you know. So, well, let's see. There was Alfred University and Arizona State, and there's Antioch. I didn't know anything about Antioch. So I was very, very much led by grace. And so I land in Yellow Springs, Ohio. First time I've really been out of New York. And I didn't sleep for 2 days. I stayed up two nights in a row because everybody was so interesting. And I say, wow, I finally found my people. I finally found the other high weird people that I'm going to want to spend my life with.
He became a teacher in Washington, D.C., taught a year in the public schools, started an alternative high school, then was courted by publishers to write a book about it, well-reviewed, badly marketed, then moved with a girlfriend to Michigan, wrote for a newspaper, taught labor history at Wayne State, wrote another book, nothing happened, laid off at Wayne State, and, well, where was this leading?
I took a job for the city of Ann Arbor, Michigan, doing tree work, taking down trees that had Dutch elm disease. And my Jewish mother, bless her, she worried about everything. And so she was afraid that I would catch Dutch elm disease. So I said, Mom, people don't get Dutch elm disease. Dogs get it. She goes, dogs get it. She was worried about Buster. She says, what happens to dogs? I said, they lose their bark. So during the summer, that was great because it was really great to have a job where friend of mine, when he took a job after being self-employed for so many years, he says, guess what I think about on the way home from work every day? I said, what? He says, nothing. So that was, you know, I was thinking about nothing. And I'm starting to feel depressed. I'm starting to feel like this is a low point in my life and that, you know, he had so much promise. Now he's saying, you want fries with that? And they put me with this new guy who was a brilliant, turns out, a brilliant psychologist. He needed a job too. And then one day he says, you're a writer. Why don't we start a newspaper? And so we started an anonymous, humorous newspaper for the guys at the shop, which ended up changing the workplace and changing my life. Because it was, if you can imagine this, an ongoing, interactive situation comedy. Imagine coming to work in one of these classic all-male workplaces where everybody comes in every day, sits in the same place, eats the same crap for lunch, tells the same BS stories. Nothing ever changes. All of a sudden, we are here with a newspaper chronicling all of these things. And our slogan was, all of the news before it happens, guaranteed to be fallacious if not true. And so, of course, some of the things were exactly the way they happened, and some of the things were slightly modified, and some were totally made up, and we figured they'd figure it out. What I learned, I did this paper for 2 years, even only worked at the shop for a year. It was so much fun that I continued to do it. And what I realized was humor has a tremendous power to tell the truth, to break a trance, to tell the truth. And so that's what we did. We busted the trances. We broke all the lies. We talked about racism. We talked about all of these issues at the shop. You know, for example, there was a lot of carelessness about using herbicides, weed killers. And people were very careless about it. So in our Urban Forestry Workers Survival Manual, one of the pieces that we put out, our definition of weed killer was chemical substance that kills living things, some of which are weeds. Totally changed the way people started looking at those substances. So I started seeing the power that humor has to change our minds, change our thinking.
Right? I'm a fundamentalist. And there is a difference. Because, you know, fundamentalists say heaven is above us. Fundamentalists say heaven is all around us. Now, as a fundamentalist, I believe Life is a joke, but God is laughing with us, not at us. The Creator is watching the Comedy Channel. We're what's on.
And so out of that, I ended up starting a paper in Ann Arbor, one of the earliest of its kind, which was called Pathways. And it was about community and spirituality, personal growth, holistic health, et cetera, and politics, which was unusual for those days. I put them all together and did this paper for 2 years. Now, in starting this paper with another associate, we realized that people took this spiritual stuff way too seriously. And so we decided that we had to have humor. And this name, Swami Beyondananda, had flew into my head one day. And I love names. I love the sound of words. And I love the sound of words that are puns. And Swami Beyondananda, that sounds funny. I didn't know that Ananda meant bliss, but I knew that all of the Swamis had something Ananda. And so when it came time to pick a mascot or a character for Pathways magazine, we picked the Swami. And then at the end, at the back of the magazine, on the inside next to the back cover, every month the Swami would have, usually it would be like a mock ad. And the first one we did was a spoof of, you know, the old famous artist school. So we had famous guru school. We're looking for people who want to draw on higher consciousness. And yeah, we had testimonials, and one said, "Dear Swami, loved your leadership training, please send followers," you know, and we got great response on it. We did one on teach your dog to heal, because dogs are natural healers, and we had tantrum yoga, use your anger to heat your home. And the other stuff was good too. Every month I would do 5 different people on a different topic. We called that viewpoints. We call it viewpoints. Meanwhile, my column that I had written for Pathways picked up by a number of other smaller papers and also the old East-West Journal. So I got some notoriety that way. Now before, the only performance I'd ever done was playing in a garage band. And I get a call from a guy named Arnold Patent. And I don't know if you ever run into Arnold, but he wrote a book called You Can Have It All. And Arnold, his whole spiritual teaching was his mantra, the universe handles the details. The universe handles the details. Just basically state your intention, get out of the way, the universe handles the details. So Arnold calls me up. He says, I'm having a week-long workshop in California. At that point, I'm living in Michigan. He says, I would love to have you come out and do a humor workshop and maybe a performance, because he knew I'd done humor for some of his events. So I said, great. And so I very hastily put together a costume for the Swami. This was going to be Swami's first performance ever anywhere. So I would say, what am I going to wear? Well, I had these funny suspenders and my baseball uniform and a rainbow afro, and I figured that should do it. So about midway through the week, I'm at this workshop in front of about 200 people, and, you know, they kind of get that I'm funny and it's going to be funny, but this is the Swami's first performance. And I walk out there, and the Swami is about to say his first words ever, and the microphone plummets and the mic stand completely collapses, and people start laughing, and the sound guy, a little embarrassed, comes and puts the mic back up. I go to say my first words for the second time, and once again, same thing happens. Mic plummets. Now everybody's in hysterics. I haven't said anything yet. This might be a sign from God. So finally, I go to say my first words for the third time, and for the third time, the mic stand plummets, and now people are in hysterics. And before the sound guy, and remember, this is Arnold Patton's workshop, The Universe Handles the Details. Before the sound guy could pick up on it, I grabbed the mic, and Swami's first words are, "Well, looks like the universe is screwed up." Only I didn't say screwed. So there was a word that I used. It was the only time I have ever used that word in performance in almost 20 years of performing, and it was my first words ever out of the Swami's mouth. And so the practice that I've been doing for the last 20 years almost is in in performance, creating that space where the audience can think it's going to be one thing when it ends up being another. In the classic, I was at some kind of a workshop and there's a little after party. And in a conversation with a woman, there's nothing going on between us because I'm married, but she's just talking and she tells me that she hasn't been with a man in 2 years. I said, I was celibate for 14 years. But when I turned 15, I said, enough of that. And so what I love about comedy, you know, in the comedy club comedy, in probably going back to vaudeville, you either kill or you die. Somebody once said, dying is easy, comedy is hard. On the other hand, when a comedian kills, what I realize is what the comedian is killing is preconceptions. The comedian is killing beliefs. The comedian is killing the trance that needs to be broken. So that's how I see my craft, as breaking the pattern of the mind that wants to make premature conclusions. So somebody asked the Swami, how do you feel about wild game preserves? And the Swami said, oh, they would taste terrible. You immediately changed the picture. And so the moments that I could do that through comedy, I love that. We did a show in Portland, Oregon. There was a woman who came to the show that we became friends with, and she was a performer. So we asked this gal, you know, how could we improve this show? She says, you know, you need to do something that's a little bit more risky. And I got the idea, live questions from the audience. And so I started doing it, and thank God, the first time it absolutely worked. Now, of course, there are times when it doesn't work, so I have to have a bailout line because, again, it's about the audience. It's about the audience being entertained. It's not about, look at how clever I am. If I miss a question, you know, if I'm stumped, I might say, you know, here is an amazing coincidence. I spent the entire day thinking about that very issue, knowing that that question would be asked, and I forgot what I came up with. Or, I know you didn't like that answer, but I wasn't crazy about the question. So what? Move on to the next question.
I can tell this is a very evolved group. Yes, right? Yes, yes. And you all know that each of us already has all of the answers within. It's matching them with the corresponding questions. That is the challenge.
And I'd say that there's really been three stages so far of content. Initially, of course, the Swami was poking fun at New Age spirituality. He called himself a sacred cowpoke. And many of those jokes had to do with the excesses of pathological purity and the excesses of spiritual materialism and the whole idea of prosperity consciousness and self-improvement. So one of Swami's early routines has to do with a mantra that he gives people, guaranteed to help them lose weight and bring more money into their lives, which is, everything I eat turns to money and my drawers are full of cash. Well, the second incarnation of Swami had to do with healing laughter. I developed a Sunday morning talk I would do at churches as Steve on the healing power of laughter. But not just the physical healing power of humor, but the power of humor to heal us emotionally, enhance creativity mentally, and give us spiritual perspective. And so, you know, the Swami was the guru of ho, ho, holy, he, he, healing, and so on. Now, of course, a lot of my humor is just silliness. But about 3 years ago, as I started noticing that the political conversation was being very intrusive, I started getting the idea of doing more political material, and a friend of mine says, you know, the Swami should run for president. And I wrote Swami's State of the Universe address, which is very political. The response that I got was so overwhelming, hundreds of letters from all over the world. And I went, I'm onto something, because the humor all of a sudden is in service of something. And then I switched the mission to Swami for President. a seven-step plan to heal the body politic and cure erectile dysfunction. I'm also doing more stuff as Steve in a show called Wake Up Laughing. And the whole idea is we as a world need to wake up. And what better way to wake up than laughing? Because that's, after all, what was happening back there in the Department of Forestry. These people were waking up. They were waking up laughing. And in the wake of the laughter, they were able to have new information come in under the radar. So that's how my mission is developing right now.
Forget white-collar crime. We are experiencing a gold-collar crime wave. They are practitioners of an ancient Chinese art of using their energy field, or qi, to take unfair advantage. That is called cheating. You know? Think about it. Thomas Jefferson, radical that he was, he'd be looking at the situation saying, forget the airline passengers, let's strip search the government.
When you're involved in a rigged game, the only way to win a rigged game is to expose the game as rigged. We don't need a revolution. We've already had one, thank you. Now we need the American evolution, where we evolve in consciousness to the point where we can actually be the citizens that our founding fathers imagined. The use of farce. Is this the use of farce to overthrow a government? No, we're not trying to overthrow the government. That's revolution. In evolution, we outgrow the government. The progressive movement has become so secular that they've lost spiritual perspective. That's why Martin Luther King was so powerful, because when he said, we shall overcome, he knew that we will indeed overcome. He knew that it might not happen in the next year or 10 years or his generation, but he knew that in standing up for what's good and for what's right and for what's just, we all know what that is. We all know what's good. All this other stuff is self-serving BS. We know it's good to not cheat. It's bad to cheat. We know it's good to not steal. It's bad to steal. And we know that it's good to not kill and it's bad to kill. We all know that. But it all gets smushed over by spin. But in our heart of hearts, we know it's right. And so because Martin Luther King had that moral authority, there was such a passion. I went to a meeting the other night. It was about, you know, the voting situation in Ohio. I left that meeting depressed. I don't get depressed. Why was I depressed? Because there was no singing. There was no gospel. I went to another event two nights after that. And there were some musicians there who sang courageous, heartfelt songs that, if enough people hear them, will make a difference. And that's the difference. There has to be the psychological, emotional, and spiritual level. It's not about policy.
Now, I've got more bad news. The Earth's laugh force has been compromised. Yes, and the scientists have discovered a hole in the boson layer. That is the planetary clown chakra. Not enough levity rising.
We were a very unreligious family, and in fact, my dad didn't even have a bar mitzvah because my dad was a little bit of a thug. And when he was a kid, he also wrote with his left hand. And so the rabbi hit him with a ruler on his hand and broke the skin. And my dad threw the guy down a flight of stairs. So he didn't get a bar mitzvah. But when I was growing up, my dad and mom decided that it was good for me to get a Hebrew education. And, you know, after school, 2 days a week, I would go. And it was great. I loved it. I loved learning Hebrew. And everything was cruising along until one day the Hebrew school teacher said something to the effect of we should only be associating with our own kind. I was about 12 years old, and I stood up. I said, that's not what I was taught in my family. And I looked around, you know, in my given the neighborhood that I lived in our little gaggle of kids that hung out together, we had two or three Jewish kids. We had an Italian Catholic kid. We had some other white Protestant kid. We had three or four black kids. And that was who hung out. That's who we were. And so I'm looking at this gaggle of kids and I'm saying, that ain't right. And that turned the off switch for me. Well, you know, in terms of taking things seriously, I think that's why there was an anti-Vietnam War movement, because all of us who grew up in the 50s took it seriously. We took the Pledge of Allegiance seriously. We took our tradition seriously, and we were just being good kids. And what we started seeing was stuff that we did not want to associate with as American. And the first time I'm going on a march, you know, my dad, imagine, you know, kind of the classic torn T-shirt Brooklyn character. And he says, hey, last time they burned a flag, you know, and all that. And he was pretty upset about it. When I came back from the march, all he would say was, well, I saw there were a lot of people there. So I'll fast forward about 3 years, and it was the Chicago convention, and he's watching the Chicago convention, Democratic convention on TV. I said, what do you think? He says, I think the kids ought to burn down the city. Only he used an adjective before city. So we grew up in a family where inquiry was, even though it was an uneducated, working class family, my dad probably got as far as the sixth grade. Somehow we established that we had free speech in our family. And so when I started doing these things that other kids were doing surreptitiously, I did them in full view because there was no need to deceive in our family. I don't know, there was probably some discomfort. However, I think my parents were ultimately grateful for it, and they ended up knowing a lot more than my cousin's parents.
Vyandananda, namaste, Swami. Namaste.
Oh, namaste. Go. Bye.
In Santa Rosa, California, we were talking with Steve Behrman and the Swami. You can visit his website at www.wakeuplaughing.com.
This is Hitchhiking Off the Map.